Good evening, everybody. This is James McKenney with my Science Hour for April 4th, 2019. Many topics to cover tonight. First of all, this is in the news so much. Electoral college, people want to do away with it. It is one of the basic cornerstones of our election system. It's not something to be taken lightly or because a political party thinks that maybe in the next election they can win if they get rid of it. But the reason for the Electoral College is that it's because if you could just depend on the big cities to elect the candidates, you would not have to go out into the countryside because the population, you would only have about three cities in the entire country that would elect the president. And this is encapsulated in the belief of Hillary Clinton that she didn't have to go to Wisconsin or Michigan or Pennsylvania. She didn't have to go to those states or the Carolinas. No, she didn't have to go to those states. Ha! Those were not important because she had L.A., she had New York, she had the big cities, Denver, Las Vegas. She had the big cities covered. And with massive cheating in 10 locations in the United States, she just didn't go to most places. And Trump did. And by doing so, he was able to pick up states that were traditionally Democrat throughout history almost. But anyway, that is the entire point. And Trump said this too. He said he would rather, it would make it a lot easier for him if there was not an electoral college. Then he said all he'd have to do is campaign in New York and Los Angeles and he wouldn't have to go anyplace else. It'd be a lot easier on the pocketbook, time, everything else. But he went out and pounded the pavement in rural, local America. And that's why he won the election, because of the Electoral College. And he knew how the Electoral College works. And it gave the American public the actual ability to elect a president. And by the way, Hillary Clinton did not win the majority of the popular vote. She had 17 million illegal cheating votes, basically, as I've proven in my regressive analysis, mathematical analysis of the actual election results. And I had four different regressive and mathematical analysis, ways to look at the election, and they all came up with the same exact numbers, about 17 million votes that she got illegally, and they came from 10 places. And that's the entire point, that without the Electoral College, people can stuff the ballot box in L.A., New York, Chicago, and that's it. That's the election. That would be the future of your election. So people that are jumping up and down saying, get rid of the Electoral College, it's bogus. Anyway, enough of that. SpaceX, this is a really positive thing. SpaceX has a module that's called Crew Dragon, and they had a test flight back in early March. I don't think I talked about it on the show, but they took a dummy passenger up to the International Space Station and then returned. And now this summer, they are going to take live people, I think three or possibly four NASA astronauts, up to the International Space Station. And that will have been the first time since I think it was 2011, the Atlantis space shuttle was the very last space shuttle launch, 2011, under the Obama watch. And that was the last time a human being has launched from the United States since that point in a public program. Other launches have taken place, etc. But in terms of going up, say, to the International Space Station, this will be the first one coming up this summer. So my hat's off to Elon Musk. And they asked Elon Musk in an interview, they said, why are you doing this? You know, you're putting all your money into this and everything. He said, I want to see man become interplanetary before he dies. Now, that's kind of a tall order. But, I mean, he's pushing this, and it's just you might liken it to other people in history who just took it upon themselves to do things. And these kind of people give me inspiration because even though I don't have billions of dollars to spend, I wish I did, but I'm trying to do my part as much as I can with the resources that I have available to me to take the human race into the future. Okay, now here's a story that just blew me away when it came to my attention. Solar panels. Now, I've been in and around the energy, alternative energy business. I've watched this. I've worked in solid state. My degree from Tulane University is in solid state nuclear physics. And the solid state part was my research, which I did under National Institute of Health Research grant to Tulane University through my advisor, using polyvinyl carbazole, which is a polymer, and putting basically what they call doping elements into it to create different electrical properties. And one of the combinations that I discovered was actually used in a patented material that then became the basis of IBM's copying machines. They use a material that was based on my research. But at any rate, so I know a bit about testing and laboratory testing of semiconductors, etc. So anyway, I found this out, and this something, as much research as I've done, as much criticism I have made of solar panels, I did not know this fun fact. It's not so fun, actually. And that is that the testing that is done to create the specification for the output of a solar panel is done in a cold laboratory environment with a flash. And now this is something that I actually did these kinds of experiments when I was at Tulane. Part of what I did is I would create a substrate and I put it on an aluminum backing and the polyvinyl carbazole, etc. And I would have different types of light testing. I'd have ultraviolet, I'd have x-rays, because we were ultimately looking for x-ray sensitive materials that created the Xerox process with x-rays, not visible light. So I had ultraviolet, x-rays, visible light, infrared, etc. But at any rate, the difference between sustained activity, in other words, if you shine a light on it constantly, is it going to really act at the necessarily at the same rate of energy production or physical characteristics as a flash test? So at any rate, just to summarize, if you what they're doing in a laboratory in testing solar panels is a flash test. In other words, the panel is cold. They do a flash of light and then measure the electrical output. But here's the problem. When you take that same solar panel and you put it out on your roof in the hot sun, it loses a 1% of output for every 2 degrees of temperature rise. So that solar panel on your roof, as it heats up, is going to lose a lot of power generation capacity. And the end result is that if you took a 1,500 watt solar panel, a fairly big one by today's standards, then it would only put out about 900 watts of power, of energy, converted to electrical energy. And that's a huge drop. And so they are, in a sense, giving false advertisement. It would be like telling you you're buying a car with 200 horsepower, but it's only going to develop 200 horsepower when the car isn't running. Or when it's sitting there still. But as soon as you put it into gear and take it out on the road, it's only going to have 120 horsepower. That's the equivalent of what they're doing. This is not funny at all. And when I found this out, like I say, I have researched solar panels, three-bladed wind generators, and I've been very critical of these. But I never knew that this level of deception was occurring in the way they present this to the public. And also, I've been in numerous places where I've heard ads on the radio where they go, save up to 70% of your electric bills you know, install solar right now. And the problem is, very few people, if any, will ever save 70% of their electric bills. In fact, your electric bill will probably go up. But once you've installed them, and a lot of times it's the power company that's pushing this. Now, why would the power company push something that would compete against its bottom line, which is selling you electricity? Because they're in business. They're like any other business. If they don't make a profit, they're going to be out of business. And a lot of electrical power companies have gone out of business. So why would they encourage you to get a product that would take away from their bottom line? Well, the end result is solar panels don't work. I mean, they'll produce a little bit of energy, but that power company can turn them off. And I've even heard stories where they would go out, and after people have installed these, they'd go out and tell them, well, now you got to pay us a fee per month because you have these solar panels installed. So it eats away at the little bit of savings that might be produced. And besides, just as a side note, I've talked about this, solar panels, in my way of viewing things, just simply don't work. They're not going to solve the bottom line of solving the world energy problem. They only work for a few hours when the sun is shining. And so anyway, most of them are grid connect. They don't store up in a battery. You would have to have massive battery banks in your house to store up enough energy to actually run everything in your house. Anyway, that's, you know, there, you could argue all day long, but it's literally, I've given this example, and you do this sometimes in physics. You go to the extreme when you're trying to understand a problem. If you could produce a 100% efficient solar panel and sell it for a penny, it still would not solve the world energy problem. Okay, just a quick note on the MAX 8, the Boeing 737 aircraft that have been under scrutiny lately. I talked about last week, the Southwest Airline, one of the planes lost an engine while it was en route without any passengers from Florida to California. Why are they flying these planes even without passengers? But anyway, this week it came out in the news that the FAA and the European, the equivalent of the FAA in Europe, knew about this over 2 years ago. And they okayed it. They gave it a pass. And there was supposed to be some kind of software fix. And really, it was just kind of swept under the rug, the best way you could describe this activity of the FAA. And it turns out that both pilots that were involved in the fatal aircraft accidents did follow the set procedures for recovering the airplanes. And so there's a little bit more of information what happens when the planes primarily are taking off. And this has been a problem with many different kinds of airplanes. If you have issues with engine problems on takeoff, the B-29 bomber was famous for having problems on takeoff. And that's why, by the way, when they had the Enola Gay B-29 that went to Japan with the nuclear bomb on it at the end of World War II, they did not arm the bomb until the B-29 aircraft was well up into the air, because the B-29s were famous for flipping over on takeoff. Or take something like a P-38 fighter, a fully loaded P-38 fighter. If you lost an engine, the torque from the other engine would be so great it would flip the plane over, and it didn't have enough altitude and velocity to keep it going. And so what's going on with the MAX 8s is that upon takeoff, the issue is that there's the autopilot is not compensating for the fact that it's giving a false reading that the nose of the plane is going down. And so I don't know all of the details of this, but basically the pilots have to very quickly unman the autopilot and take over controls. And it says even if they do that, they may not have enough time or ability of the spacecraft or of the airplane to recover. In other words, even if they try to recover, because it's a part of the issue is a signal of loss of power on the engines, because you got to keep those engines moving to keep the power coming out the back side of them. Anyway, this is an issue that, once again, on takeoff, is the very critical time in any aircraft. So, somebody called in on a John Moore the other show the other day and said, how come they have these big engines? Well, that's why on takeoff, you need lots and lots and lots of power. And then, of course, there's a drag associated with those big engines. But when you get up to cruising altitude at 35,000 feet, part of the issue, too, is you're dragging in a tremendous amount of air from the flight path. You're dragging in a tremendous amount of air to keep those engines fed with oxygen. Okay. Well, it's getting that time of season again. And actually, a couple times in my history, I've announced that I want to run for president. And clearly, I don't think I would ever be elected president. It's just not enough people know about me or whatever. But the thing I would like to do is become known enough so that some of my ideas become part of the political process. Part of this would be my 11 on my webpage. I have a subpage that talks about the 11 mega earth projects that I was involved in and am involved in, one of them being the issue of Yellowstone National Park, the volcano. And the end result is that the volcano at Yellowstone, the three times in history when there were mega explosions was when there was a lake there. And the first one was in when the caldera was in what we now call Idaho, and that's been moving ever since. But those three incidents of the dozens and dozens of known eruptions occurred when there was a lake there, and one of the biggest lakes in history for the Yellowstone caldera is there right now. So we have to drain that lake. NASA wants to pump water down there. Now, I mean, talk about insane, doing the exact thing that would cause that volcano to blow sky high. Now, NASA, what a bunch of idiots. These people, you know, who let them out of their playpen? But anyway, along with the other things that I would try and make known is, of course, the wing generator. I'll just quick go through these topics. Curing spam. It's to the point now where you cannot send an email to your friends and family, even, without it being blocked or sent back. The whole issue of spam, it's like this. What if you had at your front door a line of people that went down the steps, down to the street, and down the block, and they were all standing there, and they knock on your door, and you'd go to the door, open it up, and this person goes, "Hi, do you want to buy some socks?" "No, I don't." You shut the door. As soon as you shut the door, somebody knocks on the door and says, "Hi, do you want to buy some jeans?" "No, I don't want to buy jeans." As soon as you shut the door, somebody else knocks on it. That's what spam is like. It's unwanted solicitations, and a lot of it is really crude. So we pay money to have a spam filter, to have filtering, but now it's to the point the systems are so jammed that the spam and the spam producers are getting more sophisticated, that they're overpowering the system to where legitimate emails cannot get through. This is absolutely insane, and it could be fixed overnight because there's no penalty for creating spam, unwanted solicitations. And a lot of them are very vulgar, personal unwanted solicitations. And so anyway, this also happens on your phone where you get unwanted texts. So they say, "Oh, well, you can register your phone number with some agency," and then you're not supposed to get any. Well, that doesn't work either. But at any rate, that's another one. Internet security could be solved overnight. That's something I worked in for years when I worked for a company that sold internet front-end processors for IBM mainframes, we never had a security issue, ever, because we knew how to manage it. The internet today is like the wild, wild west, only worse. Okay, and that can be fixed. Monopolies in businesses. The idea that Jeff Bezos should pay 25 cents to send a book across the country, and I have to pay $5.50 to send the same book across the country, and no, I do not sell on Amazon. Okay, copyright protection and patent protection has really become a giant mess. In the fact that on the internet, there are places that basically steal material and then publish and print it, and the owner of material has really lost the ability to have your own material. Okay, then space vulnerability of satellites. India just launched a satellite that took out a hypothetical satellite. And so anyway, that's the vulnerability of space. Trump just talked about EMPs. Once again, the smart grid is not, I repeat, it is not the solution. The grid vulnerability requires people who understand how the grid was designed, not people who want to make money off of selling you things you don't need. The smart grid came in under Obama, and the whole purpose of the smart grid is to control the voltage that goes to people, so you can turn that off to people that aren't good, according to government standards. And then, of course, just space in general. There's a lot of, and then energy in general. Just make a quick comment. What Trump did this week, he talked about, they're trying to concentrate on this quip that he made about wind turbines causing cancer. And in fact, there is evidence that there are some serious issues with the people that live next to these. But what he was really saying, if you don't take it out of context, he said, if they put one of these next to your house, your property value just went down. Which is absolutely true. They're taking wind generators and they're putting them all over. Ask the people in Canada, in southern Ontario, the people against three-blade wind generators. They don't work. They make a lot of noise. They have electrical hum, which is very damaging. It's a high-frequency electrical signal that these put out. And if they decide to explode, they can throw pieces of those 65-ton blades through your house and through you and all your kids. No, there's nothing nice about those things. And to boot, they don't work. So his quip about, honey, I want to watch TV. Oh, that's too bad. The wind isn't blowing is true. And that's why I have a very uphill battle with the wing generator, because I have something that works. And I realized a long time ago, I printed this in my book 2009, and I knew this long before I printed that book, but 2009, my book, McCanny Wing Generator, World Energy Project, I said that the entire alternative energy business was a farce. It was a scam from the very beginning. So anyway, okay, those are some of the things that I would run on if I were able to run as president. And yes, I would close the southern border. The situation there is absolutely absurd. And I want to make one comment. They talk about foreign aid. Let me tell you about foreign aid. It does not get to the people. It's soaked up by corruption in the government of Latin American countries. It always has been. It always will be. The only way you're going to get those people to go back to their country is say, if you go back to your country, we're going to give the foreign aid and we're going to put it in the bank account of the people. But you know the problem? Most of those people have never had a bank account, never will. These are people that live from hand to mouth, and very poor people, and that generates the gang activity, etc., because kids growing up don't have any opportunities. You know, high unemployment rate, 80% unemployment rate for youth. How do you have a country that functions like that when the government is taking all of that foreign aid money and sticking it in their pocket? Anyway, it's a horrific situation. Okay, on to the next topic. This story, I just have to go offline and laugh a bit. There's a big, big announcement. Everybody's going to see it. There will be blanket coverage of this, that they're going to show a picture of a black hole next week. So there's a big announcement. And whenever this happens, you can bet it's going to be a dud of an announcement. There's a lot of hype. But I was joking. Somebody, of course, lots of people have written in about this. But I wrote back and I said, yeah, it's going to be a black background with a black hole in the middle of it. You know, black on black. And so anyway, they go, well, no, you can see the event horizon activity. So that's how they claim they're seeing a black hole, is by seeing activity in the region. And they're talking about this one being the black hole allegedly at the center of the Milky Way galaxy, of our very own galaxy. But the end result is that this activity that they're seeing can certainly be caused by other causes, primarily electrical conditions. And so, of course, they don't want to talk about that. The whole issue, and this is going to get into a topic, I'm going to guarantee you, you're going to be interested in this topic. Okay, just another quick notice here, that if you're flying into Cairo, which probably most of you are not, there's a terrorist watch where they're shooting at commercial airliners and military craft coming into Egypt and surrounding regions. The terrorists are shooting rockets at airplanes. Just a quick note on College Gate, two movie stars and a lot of other people are appearing in court this week for bribing colleges and other universities, staff members, coaches, and other, I don't know where all this goes, but for taking like the SAT tests, faking them, going to prison because they're trying to get their kids into a good university by cheating. Gee, for some people, that just seems to be the American way. Pay and you can get any place. And just a comment for parents that are so involved in your kid's life and you're living vicariously through them, you know, let your kids grow up. Let your kids do their thing. Help them out, put opportunities in front of them, encourage them to study, you know. And when I was a kid, my parents didn't know what I was doing because they didn't understand math and physics and things like that. My parents never imagined we would go to college. You know, that's the way it was in the 1950s and 60s when I was growing up. It's just the way it was. But because I took myself and applied myself, that's where I got to, you know, go to college, free ride, full scholarship, full, matching grant for all my room and board. Also, when I got my advanced physics degree, they paid me to go to school. So I think people have to have incentives, but it has to be based on hard work, not that if you do 6 months of community service, you should get to go to college for free. Well, the problem with that is then people go and do public service and they don't have to get good grades. They don't have to work hard. It becomes a social. It becomes like you owe them that. It's like you can't give those people bad grades. You can't flunk them out because they are owed 2 years of college. Anyway, wherever socialized education has gone into place, it has been a failure for specifically that reason. Just a quick comment on Joe Biden and the touchy-feely Joe. The problem that I see is that, okay, there's the issue with adults, etc., but he's doing this with little kids, you know, on camera, fondling little kids and stuff like that. If you don't believe me, just go online. You can see that many cases of Uncle Joe Biden, or Creepy Joe as they call him, fondling little kids. And that's, you know, if these were my kids, in many cases the parents have to take the kid and move the kid away, or somebody else gets in the middle and stops Creepy Joe from playing around with touchy-feely on kids. Anyway, so it's not only about adults, which is like one comment from a woman. who represents women, she said if that happened in the workplace, he would be fired. And that's true. In today's workplace, crossing that line is not acceptable. Just a quick note here on the one of the early mathematics problems due to Diophantus of Alexandria. It's that x cubed plus y cubed plus z cubed is equal to k, where k is an integer. And so anyway, the question is, can you find numbers that cubed? And of course, one of the similarities to this is the Pythagorean theorem, x squared plus y squared equals z squared. And of course, this corresponds with certain special triangles. But this problem is a little bit different, and the numbers can be positive or negative, whereas the sides of a triangle, of course, can only be positive. So anyway, that's in the news. That's rather interesting. But the way they're solving this, it's actually a number theory problem, a field which I work in with prime numbers, etc. It's a field that I'm very close to in my mathematics world. But the problem I have with the solutions they're finding, they find them by supercomputers. It does not give you any understanding. These problems should be solved through understanding, not brute force computers. And that's the big complaint that I have about the solutions that they have for prime numbers, that they're using brute force computer-generated solutions, and it doesn't tell you anything. If you find a big prime number with a supercomputer, it doesn't tell you anything about the prior numbers or future numbers. It just, oh boy, we found a big prime number. So what? Because let me tell you, the biggest prime number in existence today, solved by a supercomputer, is teeny weeny eensy weensy compared to infinity. Okay. So anyway, okay, now I'm going to go into a bit of a, and I'm sorry I have to spend some showtime dealing with this, but I have a real problem with peer review. Peer review is that lovely system in which scientists, typically university scientists or research organization scientists, what I call tier two science, not tier one science, which never sees peer review, never gets submitted to peer review. And actually, the majority of science and engineering that is done today never sees a peer review journal. It's never sent to them. The peer review is kind of a clubhouse to make the people in universities feel special. And the original purpose of peer review was legitimate, that it's to keep the riffraff out, because there is a lot of junk science out there, and I see it all over the internet, lots of really nutcases who think they're scientists and aren't, you know, would be trying to flood the peer review journals if they could. So peer review has a purpose, but it also has some downfalls, which basically it allows monopolies to exist in science, and especially when it's government-supported scientists and science and universities, etc. They get this snooty attitude that unless it was developed at Harvard or Yale or Caltech or UCLA, it couldn't possibly be, it's, you know, the not invented here syndrome. So anyway, I got in an email, I get the American Geophysical Union newsletter that comes with my specific branch of the of science that I work in. And this particular email has to do with university professor advancement. Now, I'm going to read this, and then I'm going to read my response. And I think this is very important because the end result is exactly what I have been talking about peer review. And why should you be interested in this? Because everybody out there, you're paying for this. You're paying for scientific vacations. You're paying for elitism. You're paying for terrible, terrible science that is occurring in this country, and it's going to keep on this Big Bang and the dirty snowball comet model and the idea that the solar system all began at one time, all phony, baloney science, but it keeps being promulgated. Anyway, I will read this, and then I'll read my response. Okay, and now remember that this is coming from a very conservative source. This is the American Geophysical Union representative, actually from the University of California, LA, UCLA. So I'm going to read this. And this is about a study that was done criticizing the advancement and the method of judging professors for advancement. So here you go. It says, and by the way, this is a satire written by a person in this community. The American Association of Academic Advancement has just issued their long-awaited study on improving efficiency of the academic processes through the university system in the United States. The first study to be released in what is expected to be an exhaustive look at the internal workings of academic departments in all disciplines concerns the promotion process, which is obscure in many institutions and labor-intensive in all. Just a second, I'm going to move this a little bit so I can read a little faster. At present, a typical candidate for advancement for promotion is asked if he or she wishes to be promoted. If the answer is yes, is asked for endless information about what is accomplished since the last promotion, including service to the community, contribution to diversity, which, believe me, universities are not diverse. It's only a front. Okay, excuse me, I'm going to continue here. Contribution to diversity, communication with the press, communication with the science community, committee work, publications, service on committees, awards, both honorific and financial, in addition to questions about teaching and students. After the candidate answers the request, this material is then sent to reviewers who may or may not know the candidate, and they may compare the candidate with other faculty members elsewhere whom they may or may not know well. These records from the candidate and evaluations by external members of the university community are then reviewed by an internal committee of faculty members who may or may not understand what the candidate does or why, and who may or may not have heard the candidate speak in a class or scientific meeting, and who may or may not like the candidate for reasons that may or may not be valid. The committee then writes a recommendation on promotion or may not be on time, and this is voted on by the faculty who may or may not care by this point. And the vote sent to the chair who may or may not agree, who then writes a letter that may or may not be supportive. This letter goes to a committee on academic personnel that may or may not have a member who is literate in the field of the candidate. Then this committee passes their recommendation to the dean, who may or may not be in the mood to promote faculty, this specific one or anyone. The decision then goes back to the department that may not agree, and, let me just scroll down, more meetings may or may not ensue, and after several interactions, the candidate may or may not be recommended for a promotion. Now get this. 45 volumes constituting the AAAA, which is this advancement organization, 45 volumes report can be succinctly summarized by ignoring the first 44 reports, which is consistent with the opinion of the association. And all this is a tremendous waste of time that departments should just cut to the chase and promote candidates as their H indices. Listen to this. The number of papers that have been cited, that the numbers of papers they published, the number of times they've been cited or more, past certain thresholds such as 10, 20, 30, 40, etc., published papers or references to their published papers, more pretentious institutions may choose higher numbers. This simple change to automatic academic advancement will not alter the end result, but it will save the departments, the university, the reviewers, and candidates an enormous amount of time. The association could not be reached for comment as its members were in a meeting. Okay, so anyway, here's my response. Okay, I said, Dear Anne, that's the lady that wrote this piece, I said, Dear Anne, since I was on the faculty at Cornell University in 1979 to 1981, I realized what a complete fabrication and waste the entire university higher education scam is, including peer review, respectable journals, grant research, top-down administration, etc. All this was and continues to be a complete joke, albeit a very bad one. Since then, I have remained an independent science scientist, funding my own research and doing quite well, as a matter of fact. I have two weekly radio shows and which are heard worldwide, and I'm a guest on many international radio shows on a regular basis. My classroom includes millions of people who are convinced of what I tell them. The 95% of what is taught in universities could not possibly be true. I stopped going to AGU meetings years ago because I could no longer stand the drooping old men and their young groupie counterparts adding meaningless tripe to endless volumes of peer-reviewed journals. Your email below just confirms exactly what I was saying, and here's the end result. No one but no one will dare publish anything that goes ever so much against the standard baloney stories of the Big Bang, Dirty Snowball Comet model, the ridiculous story that the solar system formed all at one time, and on and on and on. The new PhD will soon learn that his road to success will be a numbers game. More publications will mean advancement. These will consist of low-quality minor additions to existing peer-reviewed articles. The more articles one references, the more will reference said article. This will be the only game in town, and yes, it is a game. Refereed by elderly professors in the Mutual Admiration Science Society of the lofty halls of academia. This I call Tier 2 science. None of these people, and apparently including yourself, has the least clue that real science is taking place all around you, of which you know nothing. Real science does not get submitted to peer-reviewed journals. So the new solution of measuring performance by the number of public articles will assure mediocrity forever. Then I sign my name, James McCanny. I tell her to visit my webpage, where I have the critical review of peer review on my webpage, etc. So anyway, sorry for the kind of diversion, but I think it's important for you out there to understand that the university system is dragging on and on, the scientific vacations, the grant money, the publication in journals, the measurement of metrics used to advance professors to give them tenure is based on your complicitly signing on to this system. And of course, I didn't do that. I managed to stay at Cornell for 2 years. I got papers published in peer-reviewed journals, but I very soon learned that unless you comply with what they want you to say, you get slam dunked. And so anyway, I think it's important that to note that I'm responding to these people, and I have the credentials to do it. I have been there. I've done it. I've stood nose to nose with arrogant NASA scientists who don't know what they're doing and told them that to their faces. Anyway, on to the next topic. Okay, switching gears to the wing generator. Now, there are some updates here that are very important for people to understand. And yes, we are taking orders for the 10 kilowatt, the 25 kilowatt, and the 50 kilowatt wing generators for installations that will occur this summer. And there's a lot going on in the background. I really can't go into all of this on the air. In fact, I've been really busy. I go to work on my prime number work to get a break from the wing generator. So much is going on with the wing generator. And so anyway, let me explain what's going on. These particular models of the wing generator, let me just start with the 10 kilowatt. That'll give us a basis for understanding what this can do. 10 kilowatts of power is a lot of power. This is enough to power 5 or 6 homes that are using electricity at the rate at the national average. The average home in the United States uses the equivalent energy of 13 100-watt light bulbs burning 24/7 all year long. That's the equivalent. That includes air conditioning, washing, laundry, lights, toasters, refrigerator, everything else that you use. 1,300 watts, that's 1.3 kilowatts on a continual basis. Okay, so if you took a 10-kilowatt system and gave it a 50% rating, you could, and that would be the constant production for low wind, high wind, all conditions, etc. And by the way, the wing generator, as opposed to solar panels, works day and night, wind or even low wind. It works in the rain, when it's sleeting. It works from the equator to the North Pole. It's the wind is the most versatile energy source we have. And the, of course, disaster is this NASA-designed three-blade wind monster that doesn't work. That's people's perceptions of wind. That's Trump's perception of wind. It's really unfortunate. But anyway, back to what a 10-kilowatt system would do. It could operate from 4 to 6 homes running. These are modern suburban homes, but you would not want to put one in suburbia. My goal is, by the way, people say, well, I live in town. Can I put one at my house? And the answer is no. Your zoning would not allow it. You're not going to come and put a 40-foot wing generator tower in your backyard in town. And so the solution for people will be when we get the big ones, the 10, the 50 megawatt size wing generators. And these will go out in the countryside. And instead of having 200 three-blade wind generators, you will have one wing generator. And in most cases, the larger, the 100 megawatt wing generators will be able to replace up to 600 of those three-blade wind turbines in up to 6 million solar panels, one wing generator of the large size. But okay, back to 10 kilowatt. So anyway, the target market for the 10 kilowatt system is a farm or a ranch where your electric bill is $1,000, $2,000 a month. That's the target market for the 10 kilowatt system. And as additional appliances or applications, you could put a single electric car charging station. I now am a distributor for the United States' largest manufacturer of EV electric car charging stations. I also have a product line of reverse osmosis water production. So these can be almost any size, but that's another product. Of course, my atmosphere water generator products, those are available, and pumping water, filtering water, etc., using wind as the only energy source. Okay, so these can be on-grid or off-grid. And so if people have, say, a farm or a ranch or another industry where you have a large electric bill, that's the application for the 10 kilowatt. Okay, the 25 kilowatt would be an upgrade. Say you have a ranch or a farm and you want to convert your gas-guzzling or diesel-guzzling vehicles to electric. The first step where I would recommend that would be the 25-kilowatt wing generator. And if somebody's serious about converting all of their electrical vehicles to electricity, I would then move them up to the 50-kilowatt wing generator. So also, if you had an eco-village and you wanted a single source of electricity for your eco-village, or if you were doing light manufacturing out in a rural district, those are all applications for the 50-kilowatt wing generator. So these are available now. If you are interested, if you fit into this category where you have a $1,500, $2,000 a month electric bill, and you're on a farm or a ranch or an industry that's out in the country, or if you're in a foreign country, we also can service those. So anyway, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, and remember the applications or the products that we can also put right into the bid that we will bring out along with the wing generator, the electric vehicle charging stations, and the by the way, it's a level 2 charger. If people are familiar with that, that's with the J1772 power head that plugs into your car. And they, yes, will charge Teslas, any of the makes and models that are in the United States right now or in the, say, the Caribbean, etc. This will charge those. You just plug it in and you'll be charging your electric vehicles from the wind. The reverse osmosis machines, we'd have to look at your water needs or the water pumping, water filtration, water cleaning systems for brackish water, for seawater, for river water, for whatever your source of water, we could spec it out. We could also help you with catchment. And, you know, there's all kinds of possibilities. So energy and water solutions, that's what I'm offering here. And then this will grow as soon as we start to organize investments into other channels, then, and also if you're interested in an investment, this is also a ground floor investment for any people who are serious investors, talking about investments from $2 million and on up. Those are the levels of investment where we're talking to people, and up to as much as $50 million for the very large 100 and 200 megawatt systems. Those are investments up to the $50 million range. So at any rate, just to summarize this, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, and there is a web, an email address that you can send an email to. It's jmcc@jmccanniscience.com. Too hard to spell this on the radio show. But just go to my webpage, and that email is right at the top. Send us an email if you're interested in purchasing a wing generator or if you're interested in investing. Once again, the webpage, jmccsci.com. And so this has been an interesting road that we're now finally able to start marketing and placing wing generators. So this is a huge step. And all of the corporate, everything related to the corporation, et cetera, is now in place. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but this has been an incredible amount of work for me. And there might be a day at which I can start handing off many of the tasks that I do on a daily basis. But let me just make a little bit of a summary here of where I have come since around the year 1999. The year 2000, let's say, just a round number. I at that point, started my radio show. This radio show you listen to every Thursday night has been at the same time slot every Thursday evening since I began on WWCR. That's an amazing history. There's really no radio station personality, I don't think, that has had that long a track record with the same show. But maybe there are some out there. But anyway, that's when I started this radio show, and I started selling water filters. Well, I've gone through a lot of iterations dealing with water filters. Now I have my own product line. In a number of years ago, I added the commercial line. The MR5s and 9s are now replaced by the MR7. That's a multi-round. It's a stainless steel container, and we've got those in stock now. They're actually on sale on the webpage. But they hold 7 20-inch cartridges. It's a three-filter system, and I added that to the product line a couple of years ago. Those are for whole house or for commercial-grade water systems. And then I added the atmospheric water generators, and I have my own product line of those from 70 liters per day up to 20,000 liters per day. That's around 5,000 gallons a day from the air, extracting water from the air. And of course, that's what I had in the competition for the X Prize, where I combined that with the wing generator. Okay, now there's a lot of visibility on the wing generator. And then just recently, I added reverse osmosis as a part of the product line. So anyway, that's where this is going. And what I want to do, of course, I have my water tanks that go up to 10,000 gallons. Other forms of water storage, water filtration on that level, and then the ability to pump water using the wing generator. So my goal was to have this designed so everything would fit into standard 20 or 40 foot shipping containers. You could ship them any place in the world. And I should just take a little side note here. You know, you've probably all seen at least pictures of these massive blades going down the highway, and they're being shipped from northern European countries where they're mass produced. These are the blades for the three blade monsters. They can weigh up to 65 tons. They take special trucks to move them. But what I've done with the wing generator is I've designed them so they can be shipped in standard shipping containers. And they're very lightweight. There are a lot of differences. But my goal was be able to take shipping containers with the water solutions, shipping containers with the wing energy solution, and be able to ship them to any place in the world and have energy from the wind and water solution. So that's where it is right now, and I'm very proud of all the hard work I've done to build up to this point. It's at an amazing stage where we're now marketing this, and if this would have been in place just a year or two short years ago, this would have been a potential solution for some place like Puerto Rico or the Caribbean Islands, which were hit by damaging hurricanes, and to be able to send shipping containers where they could come in, literally take them and put them offshore onshore within a couple of days, have energy and water from reverse osmosis from the ocean. And the reverse osmosis, you can produce thousands and thousands of gallons per day of fresh water. In fact, a tremendous amount of water from reverse osmosis. So anyway, I just wanted to summarize that. I'm very proud of where this has gone, all of my hard work, and it's paying off because it's getting a lot of attention on a worldwide scale. So all of this information on my webpage. I have a new webpage for the JMCC wing, although that's not really up and fully operational yet, but the main webpage, jmccsci.com. And then also don't forget about my books, etc., on the electrical nature of the universe. All of that is valid. And that's something, too, I've been working on my entire life since I was out of college. And all of that is making great strides in educating the public. Once again, the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.